kayak anglers of the internet. Welcome back to the Advanced Kayak Angler with myself and Kurt Smith. What's up, Kurt?
What's going on, man? I am excited for today's show. I mean, like, I am like a temperature nerd. So, if I just didn't let the cat out of the bag, everybody, we're talking about water temperatures in this episode here. We got two really good anglers on, so I am like super pumped about this.
All right, let's get right to it. I'll go ahead and bring them on. First, we got Adam Reiser in the swamp.
And howdy.
Coming off his hot third place finish at Bassmaster on Lake Murray, Bailey Eichbrett. What's up, fellas?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Adam's background looks way cooler than the rest of us.
It looks very warm.
That is actually, guess where? I bet you can get it in three guesses.
Santee.
It's got to be Caddo.
No, that's Caddo.
It's Caddo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place gives me PTSD.
Kind of the same. They're all the same area down there.
Yeah, it's all just those Cinco de Cypress tree and hold on.
Damn swamps, man. God, I hate those swamps.
Man, I got to say, I'm fishing this. Got to try to get more people to sign up for that. Well, this won't show up. This podcast won't post till next Wednesday, so that'll be just a couple days before the tournament. But right now, there are only 51 anglers signed up for the Hobie on Logan Martin, and that upset, that distresses me.
That's actually upsetting to hear.
I get it. Like, everybody went and fished Murray, you know, along with Bailey last weekend. So there's, you know, it's hard to fish some events, especially back to back and kind of in a similar, you know, we're only about 8 hours from each other at my 6 to 8 hours, something like that. So, you know, I get it's hard to fish both, but come on, people.
It's a busy time of year.
Over 100.
A lot of derbies right now. There's definitely a lot of picking and choosing. I know there's very few people that are getting to fish all of them right now that they're going off in February, March, April, you know, a lot of them.
Yeah.
The economy's right. Having a lot.
Yeah, dude, big time. That's a big part of it. It's hard to travel right now.
Yeah.
Although it's nice for me. I think it's cheaper for me actually to travel to tournaments because when you leave New York, everything is more inexpensive.
I did not think of that, man. I did not think of it like that.
Living's easier when you're sleeping in your truck and you're outside of New York, man.
And you're down in Florida right now, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing the parents and the grandparents. I went and fished Murray, and I'm like, man, I'm closer to them now than I am home. I might as well go see the family. So I came down here for a week, and we'll make the trek back up north later.
Good call.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, Dave. Well, I mean, everybody still have a couple of days to sign up whenever this posts. It's Logan Martin's the best fishing on the Coosa River. So, you know, last spots, Alabama Bass, you can go there and easily catch, you know, your PB spot. So yeah.
Big spots.
Yeah. The fishing's going to be on for sure. So should be good.
I wish.
Come on, man. Stop by.
Stop on your way back.
On your way back up.
Perfect world.
I hear you.
Well, guys, man, we're here to talk about water temperatures and how they're going to affect bass. You know, especially like right now, this time of year, at least for Southwest Ohio, man, water temperatures are like they rule the behavior of fish. I mean, they're dictating everything that's happening right now with fishing where I'm at. And, you know, and I want to hear from we'll start off with you, Bailey, because, man, at Murray, water temps had to play an impact in how you were fishing there.
Yeah, it was interesting for me. So I tried to get a gauge of, like, one, backs of pockets, but also offshore, and then two different portions of the lake. But when you're offshore, you're dealing with surface temp and then what's actually below. Like when you're past that, you know, 6 to 8 feet, that sub, you know, that temperature on bottom versus surface is going to be completely different. So that's a whole different ball game. But I think it definitely played a big difference for some people, especially guys that were fishing shallow and creeks. Whoever was fine, because I've heard some guys were finding up in the 60s up the river. But guys that were fishing backs of pockets where I was at towards the dam when that clear water, it was only 51 down by up. So I think that played a little bit at Murray.
Played a little bit as, I mean, you obviously did well where the water's colder, and you would, I mean, is it generally like water temperature is important, but forage and other things are still going to be the dominant, you know, the biggest factor to it. Like, you can go somewhere and the water temperatures are better, warmer, and maybe they're a little bit further along in the spawn, further upriver. But if the fish are down in 51 degree water at the other end of a lake chasing herring, then, you know, that still trumps everything.
Yeah, I think it was a matter of, at least in my eyes, it's what your strong suits are. Like, if you're like a Russ that does really well in finding that backwater stuff, I think he's going to appeal more to the warmer temps. And the guys that like to fish shallow, you're going to look for those warmer water, because warmer, dirtier, you know, dirty water that's on a warm trend we drool as anglers when we see that, yeah. You know, getting a jig and a spinnerbait and, you know, having some fun shallow. For me, a northern guy that likes clear water, likes fish offshore, I kind of wanted to go find, if there was colder water, more in their winter patterns. That's kind of what I looked for in that tournament, just because I feel more comfortable offshore when fish are a little bit more condensed. We're knowing with 258 anglers, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be upriver and looking for that warm stuff.
So, you know, that was my question for you, really. So you found them like piled up because of it was a winter pattern, like they were like really condensed and kind of packaged for you in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the fish that I was on, they definitely didn't make it easy to catch them, but they were there. Like, they were at least grouped up together, and it seemed like the further back I could find them into their wintering holes, the easier they were to get to bite. You could tell the shallower you got, they kind of like, it almost felt like the shallower I got around that 8 to 12, 13 foot range where I had a school of fish, they were the hardest ones to get to bite. One, I think they're just easier accessible to anglers, so they might have been a little bit more pressured. But two, I think they kind of hit that water temp range where they're kind of funky, if that makes sense, where they don't know what they want just yet. Because if they go 10 feet back, it's colder, they feel it's winter. They go 10 feet forward, they feel like it's spring. So I don't really have a good judgment for those fish beyond that. They were just really tough. Murray definitely does get some pressure, but it seemed like the fish that were a little bit more stable, especially for, at least for me in my eyes, looking at those winter temperatures, the colder temps around the, cause like where I was surface temp wise out in almost 30 foot of water, it was about 50, 51, which if you want to, you can make guesses, right. But about, you know, below on bottom and 30 foot is probably going to be around that mid to low 40s, I would at least guess. So those fish are, they're not going to move up as fast if they're down that deep. You know, it's going to take a little bit for them to make that move.
So you were fishing, I mean, obviously way pre-spawn there. So that's really interesting, man. I find that, like, just your perspective on it, because you're from up north, that you're fishing offshore and you're fishing that deeper water. Because I know I probably would have been looking for warmer water, and I'm assuming that 80% of the field was probably doing that. You know, if you're looking for that 2 degree difference, you know, that's what I'd be looking for. I'd be looking for someplace that they were getting ready to move up and that it was slightly warmer than somewhere else. So that's interesting. You went down by the dam.
Yep. Yeah. I went towards the clear water, and I did go and look up shallow. Part of me was thinking though, that a lot of that field is going to be doing the same thing. But when I went and looked up shallow, I mean, I saw back in some of the cuts, at least in the clear water, you'd see 53, 54. We weren't seeing any fish. There was no signs of life. And there were some guys that could catch them, but I learned later, you know, like Ryan Nye, who had a good event, he was catching more off the breaks there in like that 8 to 12-ish. So they weren't up shallow yet, which made me think that a lot of them were still in that late winter, which made me feel a little bit better that those fish were relatively stable. But yeah, I mean, man, for me up north, dude, as soon as ice is off, the fish are eating out there. So like north, we have the asterisk of really dumb fish. So it's kind of a jaded experiment, if you will. But for us, I mean, the colder temperatures, they live out there all year round. And it's just, it really, for me, it's just comfort and less people there.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah.
So but, Adam, I mean, if Adam was there, it would have been a whole different. I would have been at least fourth.
So Adam, man, we all know that you are like Mr. Dale Hollow, right? Actually, I didn't even know your name. I just knew you as the Dale Hollow guy for a couple
years. That's all right.
You know. And what do you think, you know, and I want to get your perspective because that's a deep, clear lake, right, for the most part, about like springtime and how the temperatures of winter to springtime transition there and how those temperatures affecting the fish there.
Yeah, or just in general, it's, you know, be it Del Hollow or any place, Middle Tennessee or kind of in the general region where I live, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, a little bit Kentucky. When we're chasing after fish, bass specifically, we're looking for, there's a handful of constant things that we're going to keep in mind, you know, water color, cover, time of year, what lure and presentation we're going to use. But temperature is a big one. In those first 6 months of the year, January through June for me, are the most important water temperature times. I find myself looking down at my graph and checking that water temp less starting in July and for the remainder of the year. Because then it's just kind of general stuff. It's either hot water or kind of like spring cool water. Or you're just waiting for that fall winter cool down and it's just, you're waiting for temps to cool. I don't usually look for a range, at the back end of the year, but first half of the year, it's everything, you know, it's, what that weather forecast is going to do to the water column or the multiple water columns, absolutely will, dictate, what I'm going to do going on the water. So, man, to come back around and answer your question, Kurt, like I'm looking for the days in the wintertime coming into the springtime. So your early pre-spawn, dead hard to pre-spawn, those warm days when that water is going to jump up a few degrees, even if it's just temporarily. And then there's another cold front that comes through. That'll get some fish moving. It'll get them moving shallow. So the teaser spring days are the days I like to try to get out there, and you can usually find some movement and see about, you know, how many fish are starting to migrate towards wherever it is their next spot's going to be. That time I get excited about looking at the water temperature. And then of course you get close to the spawn, 2 degree intervals are giving me all the clues I need. It's even more or of most importance to keep an eye on that. So I guess in our region, I'm going to say the month of April is the big spawning time for a good bit of things. That's why I'm looking at temperature absolute most. And we can jump in here a little bit as far as what a little, you know, we'll say 2 to 5 degree temperature ranges that make me think, oh, this thing versus this thing, but it's so largely in the first half of the year for me when I'm thinking about those things.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's when the temperatures dictate the most about fish
agreed
behavior and yeah. movement, right? And I'm kind of like you, like between like let's say March and April. Man, I'm looking for those nights and those days where it's been warm all night. If we have like two nights that have been warm, man, I want to get out there that next day. I don't care if it's warm or not that next day, because I feel like those nighttime temperatures, if those fish are shallow or close to shallow, those ones will start getting activated. You know, the ones like Bailey was getting at Murray that are staged out like at 30 feet or more, they're not moving. They don't care yet. You know, I mean, there hasn't been a significant change to pull them up, but those shallow ones, you can go and hit them. And that's one of the things I find interesting about temperatures and how the fish behave is that it gives you a lot of options. I feel like there's a shallow bite that could be happening depending on a couple degrees in temperature and whether it's been warm or not, or you can go out and find those little pockets of them in deeper water and play the numbers game where you find 30, 40, maybe 100 of them stacked up in one area, but only like two are going to bite, right? You know what I mean? Because they're just sitting down there and they're just like seeing stuff move and like, I don't even want to move. I'm just barely going to move out of its way.
Or those temperatures at some point coming out of the wintertime can start separating like the buck bass from the female bass too. And you'll start seeing that split up as opposed to just a whole, you know, like you said, a group of dozens or a few hundred bass that are wintering whole I don't know that I really see like pre-spawn areas getting in numbers of that big, but yeah, it starts splitting them up too, where you got to think like, okay, if you catch a few fish, is it only those fish in that size? Or are you trying to find like the big girls as well? So those temps will start to split them up a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's exactly what happened, at least down by where we're fishing in the Clearwater, where a couple of the guys, you know, Ryan and I were talking. Day two, like I had fish in that probably 16, 17 that were completely gone on day two. They disappeared. I tried to follow them up. They weren't up. Some buck bass. When I moved back, that's where all the females were. You weren't catching a small fish out there. It was only big fish. And Ryan was talking about they were up shallow. It's all they could catch for 14, 15. So that's exactly what happened. Split them up.
You know, and that's like a magic time for me, because that's just after they've all been sitting together, right? Because over the wintertime, they don't care. There's probably some carp mixed in with them and some other stuff mixed in. When they're real cold and they're doing the winter thing, man, they're all just trying to hang out in this wherever they feel comfortable. Yeah, once you hit that magic temperature, man, where it's like the big fish are together and the small fish are together. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think between the four of us, we've got a good representation of like regional temperature stuff too. You know, like I guess Bailey'd be the most north of us, right? Yeah. And then Kirk a little bit further south, I'll be next. And then Dan's even further south down there. So a numerical answer as to like some stuff that we look for is going to differ. Like when you guys asked me to come on, I was thinking of water temp stuff. I was trying to think of anecdotes or examples where I noticed something that was very temperature specific related. I remember when we had that KBF October lacrosse tournament years back, the one that Russ won, or which one did he not win? the flip and bite, the power fishing bite, and it was like 46, 47, 48 degrees. They were eating it so aggressively. And the whole time I was thinking that, I was just like, man, back home right now, you wouldn't be able to fish this fast, or, you know, a big quick flip in and a big fast moving baits like that. I just wouldn't, that same bite would not happen. But I had to remind myself, like 48 degrees up in La Crosse, Wisconsin to a bass means a completely different thing to a bass on Lake Gunnersville or, you know, down Dan's way too. So you almost have to talk a little bit regionally, especially if you're going to throw specific temperature ranges out there, which we haven't done yet, but this is one of the first things I thought of.
Yeah, big time. Like I said earlier, I think the asterisk is on the north, because there's a dude out in Wisconsin, I think he's in upper Minnesota, but he fishes the Mississippi, and he caught a frogfish in February on Mississippi.
Oh my gosh.
If that tells you anything about a northern fish.
I'm moving.
Yeah.
Now top water in cool conditions is a topic that I really enjoy, because, you know, and who doesn't love doing it? And so we're all eager to look for that first or that plentiful top water bite. And like one of the things you said, Kurt, like warm nights coming into the spring, that's my cue to go ahead and grab the top water box. That's when you're going to get your first top water bite of the year, is, you know, getting into some of those warmer nights, and you get out there the next day. That's usually when it goes off. And man, I'd say around the Tennessee region, I've caught some fish on top water. I think I've caught some less than 55 degrees, but I will confidently get out top water starting at about 56 or so, and start trying to find that bite and see if it's there. And then from the whole rest of the year, you're good to go. But mid to high 50s, that's when the top water is getting to come. Not all top water, but I get to grab for a few things that I haven't touched in a while, you know.
That's right. I'm always that first dumb guy, throw them whenever it's still cold, going for the top water, because I always want to be the first one to have that big top water day. Like this weekend, I'm bringing one. You know, I doubt I'll see that warm of water, but I don't know. I haven't been in a couple weeks, but I have a bigger tournament on Gunnersville this weekend. I promise I've got one tied on.
You should.
Just in case. Yeah.
Got to keep it honest, man.
Just in case. That's right.
That's right. Big, nasty top water, too.
Yeah. They were eating some top water last weekend on Gunnersville, so you're good.
All right.
Yeah. Things can change quick, man. I mean, we get all these warm rains coming through. that dramatically changes the temperature of the water, man. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it was like 70 degrees here this morning, and it's now like 30 degrees, right? So we just had a big temperature drop, but it rained when it was 70 degrees.
Warm, I mean, February.
That's boosting that temperature up on the water big time.
And it's a huge deal. It's the runoff pattern. You know, I run it during the coming out of winter. That's my favorite time to run a spinnerbait and some runoff. It's a timing thing where you got to find like you can have water dumping in somewhere and the bait have to sniff that out first and then the bass have to sniff that out. But once like they all sniff that out, that's one of the best patterns you can do because it's some of the first warm water those fish get. And you know, they got to be excited to have some something to get the mobile and moving around and eating. So, man, the warm spring rains or the warm like late winter rains, I'm looking for a pattern. I'm looking to go fishing during those times.
Yeah. So I got a question for you guys, man. So I saw a post today on Facebook, of course, and it was someone asking about when do the fish go up the creeks, right? And I had a little take on it, but I'll let you guys go first before I say anything about it. But so, Adam, you want to start with us on that? Like, so when do the fish move up from a winter holes up to the shallows or creeks, backs of creeks?
For me, there's waves, and if you're talking more of a traditional southern fishery that has like longer creek arms, let's say a Kentucky lake or Tennessee River stuff, where you can have a creek that's a mile or two long, and the journey from the main river to the bow, or four big ones too, that'll dictate the movement or they're moving up versus a fish that only has to go several hundred yards in a pocket or off a main lake pocket, and with the same intent that a fish does, it's going to make a few miles journey versus several hundred yards journey. But it's going to be those same, you know, warm moon phase is a big deal too. If we're talking more spawn motivated fish, the amount of daylight, what is that called? The amount of like where it turns in more 12 hours of daylight versus 12 hours of night. What's that? Photo phase. The amount of solar warmth, your moon phase, those are all big, big deals, but that water temperature still got to come up. There's fish that I really believe there's fish that are more moon motivated fish. There's bass that are more, temperature motivated. And then when you're talking spawn, I think that there's certain fish that won't go until their favorite piece of cover has water on it. That's a shared theory with like a lot of the Tennessee River that has fluctuating water, where like there's some bass that we feel like just have their favorite stomp. And until it's got water on it, even if it's the end of April, even if there's already been a wave of fish going, they just want to have their favorite thing underwater. And until that happens, they won't go. But I think that's a lesser population. But when all those factors start coinciding coming to the spring, that's when they're going to make their move. Those bass are going to start that migration, leaving the wintering holes. And then it's just secondary stage or secondary points and little stopping places along the way. But I get most excited about the first big wave of spawners because I find that they go the shallowest. A lot of them are the biggest. And they tend to be the most lethargic, as in once you find them shallow or especially on a bed, they tend to not be as squirming. They don't move around as much. So I get most excited about the first wave of fish that make that move out of the wintering hole. So I don't know, around here, it's a mid-March, late March, or sometimes an early March thing. I think the last year or two, there was like an odd warm spell that even had like way the fish spawned on Gunnersville in February, if I remember correctly. I didn't see it, but had all the buddies that were down for it. So I'm just looking at the calendar, looking at the moon, and if I'm out there enough to keep a record of those temperatures, that's when I know they're going to be moving. And man, they can move quick too. It can happen in a course of a day. They can really move on you. So keeping track with them can be a more difficult thing. And I've heard some fascinating discussions in the last week or two that involved forward-facing sonar and watching the migration of these fish on that technology, as opposed to guessing where they're going to be on the way to the back of the creek.
Yeah.
Share it if you don't mind. Or is that?
Listen to Drew Gill, the dude that just won the Rayburn tournament. Just go do some homework and go listen to that dude talk. Or blow your mind a little bit.
Hey, I tell you, you know, I've done the forward-facing sonar for a few years here. And the first year I had it, I spent more time just watching what fish did with it and learning from that and how to fish for them better just by observing them than I did learning how to fish from forward-facing sonar, if that makes any sense. I was learning their behavior more so than I was learning how to fish with the forward-facing sonar because I just spent so much time watching them.
It'll continue to be that way.
Like, aren't you going to cast? And I'm like,
it's our eyes underwater. It's what we're getting to learn, and it's one of those things where we're unlearning just as much as we're learning. As far as a lot of bass fishing 101 that we're finding out, like, hey, you think fish only behave in a certain way under this certain conditions, and then you start looking them underwater and be like, oh my gosh, it's dang near freezing out, and they're moving around all over the place, and so there's no shortage of things to learn as long as you shove that little transducer underwater and start staring at a screen for a little bit. And a lot of it coincides with temperature too.
Yeah, you can learn a lot from that thing. I mean, speaking about the learning about migrations, I mean, you get clear water up here. I've noticed some, I've found largemouth that'll spawn out in 15, 16 foot of water. It's pretty incredible, the things that we thought we knew that we don't. It's, but when it comes to the creeks, man, like, I'm going to be honest, the first real creek that wasn't like a tiny stream, because our Finger Lakes are straight. Like, you guys know if you've been up here, straight pencils north and south. They don't have anything. It was probably 4 years ago when I finally ventured south in New York. So when it comes to that, I can't answer it even half as well as Adam Cannon just did. For me here, at least in New York, like how we follow our fish is as soon as ice is out, they're just about shallow. They're shallow. They're deep. They're mid. Until it gets about your 56 to 58 is when they start getting thinking about spawning. Typically for us in the glacial lakes, it's your northern end is usually your more shallower end of the lake. And that's where they'll start. And typically that's the warmer end. Cause speaking for most of our Finger Lakes, I mean, it's our northern ends might max out at 20 to 30 foot, where some of our south ends of our lakes are 400 to 500. So it's, those are, we have spawn for several months up here, because you'll have the north end that goes first. And as soon as the water temps get right, and then maybe a month and a half later, the south end starts going. So it's pretty crazy. And I mean, I've seen some pretty wild stuff where, you know, our water temp, you know, you'll launch that morning and it'll be surface like 42, 43, but the day is going to be like, we have a weird spring day in April that's like in the 70s for a couple of days, and you'll get all the fish. They crash shallow, but you'll be lucky to catch anything. It'll be it's crazy. You'll go up shallow, crystal clear, and you'll see fives and sixes and fish everywhere. You can't get them to touch anything. They're just sitting right subsurface sunning themselves because the water's still that cold, but the, you know, the temperature, they're just using it as like a sauna. But it's crazy too. It's as soon as sunset comes down, they move right back deep, but it's, I think there's still this asterisk on the north that just doesn't make sense, man. These fish just, they kind of do what they want to do.
Now, Bailey, what about talking largemouth and smallmouth? You threw out a couple temperature ranges there. Is that the same for both those species for you? Because both of those play for you almost everywhere you go in your region, whereas our smallmouth fisheries are more like scattered. We probably had just as much like spotted bass options as we do smallmouth options bouncing around here. Are you treating both those species the same in your temperature range when you consider how they behave and spawn and whatnot?
A little bit different, not too much. I guess, yeah, honestly, thinking back, like temperature wise, I don't treat it too much. It's more how I look at the full spawn. I look at them a little bit different, where depending on the fishery, it changes things. Like I just talked about, I found on certain lakes that we have, largemouth will spawn very deep. We found spawning fish into July here in the north, and it's I find that and at least in our glacial lakes, largemouth will go first. At least there's a small wave of bigger largemouth that go first. Your big females, you'll see a couple of them go very early, and try to go, if especially if the moon and all that lines up, they'll go. Then you have some, I found the first wave of smallmouth that goes up are smaller. It's usually your bucks that are all up there first. You don't see the finding the females on bed for smallmouth, I found it is much harder than finding the females for a large. Okay. Smallmouth, the female smallmouth for the most part are up there done in a day and gone, and the bucks will stay for a week.
But I've never seen a spawning smallmouth. I guess I don't fish them.
Nor have I. I've never seen one.
It is the dumbest creature on planet Earth when you do
see. Oh my God. Dude, you guys need to go to St. Clair then.
Both I want to.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
The beginning of May, need to go to St. Clair because you're going to go out there and you're going to look down. It's crystal clear to 10 feet. And you're going to be like, oh, that's a bed. Oh, that's a smallmouth. Oh, that's a bed.
I'm overdue. Cayuga's on my schedule. Cayuga's when I'm going to get in my. Look at a brown one on a bed.
Chock full, my friend. Yeah. They'll be everywhere.
I'll get it. Fine.
They're dumb. They are so dumb.
Don't even leave your baits at home. All you need is hooks. Just put the hook in the bed. It'll be good. You don't need anything. I mean, shoot, wiggle your finger off the kayak. They might come up and eat that too.
Yeah, I'll try it.
But no, what I meant different in regards to length of spawn is. Those largemouth will spawn deeper, but smallmouth will spawn really deep. On Erie, we found some spawning out in 25 foot of water.
Whoa.
And you can, it's pretty cool. You can actually see them on side imaging. Especially when those bigger girls, they make bigger beds. So when you see that, you can see them on side imaging. We put camera down, like we've seen them. Like it's some guys try to call BS until we showed them the AquaView footage that we got from it. But those will spawn late, man. Like there's some fish that go out Lake Ontario, Lake Erie that'll spawn well into July. But you just don't think about it because at that point you get a whole wave that moves offshore that's post spawn, and you just think you could chalk it up so that's another post spawn fish or fish that hasn't moved up yet. When in reality they could be spawning. I mean, that's a small case, but you get a wide range up here in the north anyway with different fisheries, but also just how different species will go because. We have like I was saying earlier, we have that small wave of big female largemouth that'll go. Then you get the brunt of most of them for the next couple of weeks. And then you have, for whatever reason, there's a late wave of big females that'll go. There's only a few. The ones that are out there, they're freaking massive.
That's good stuff. So let me ask you all this. So when I start thinking of water temperatures first half of the year, I really correlate certain baits and lures with temperature ranges. So if we're starting at like the coldest that I'm going to usually have to deal with and I'm going fishing, we're talking like, I'm probably not going to be out there or have many opportunities to fish when it's in the high 30s. Like our water temps down here in Tennessee just don't really get to that. If they do, it's only for a few days. So we're going to talk like low 40s, mostly mid 40s, and even a good bit of high 40s is what most of our winter temps are around here. So we'll just say 45 for example's sake. Blade bait, Alabama rig, little bit of jerk bait, but blade bait, Alabama rig are like what I'm looking at for the, I don't get a whole lot of fishing in during those temperatures, but that's my, you know, not talking forward facing sonar as much. Cause that, again, that you can implement a whole new group of things. And then once you start getting into the 50s, that's my favorite time. Cause like, all those things I just said still work, but then like jerk bait, chatter bait, trap. You got to, I mean, I think 55, I just think trap, right? Like around here, just 50, 55, that's just that they start biting it around like 55, 56, moving baits, anything that's got a vibration, lots of cranking, spinner baiting is probably like even like a low 50s, like temperature range. But like those lures that I just named off, those are always tied on and getting used like during that, they're getting thrown around more than anything the first couple months of the year for me. Those things.
So you didn't name a single finesse bait in any of that. Every single one of those was a moving bait, man.
Yeah. Adam goes to win. Single
finesse bait.
Hard baits too. I like hard baits in the cold water. I don't throw a lot of soft plastics. I mean, I will if I have to. And then yeah, you do got to break out the Cinco, but. Yeah, I know like the little swimmers are good too, but like if a lot of those fish ain't seen lures for a good bit of the winter and they just arrived a little shallower, just left that wintering hole, man, just anything that's red and orange and can vibrate, I can usually get bit on it. That's what I'm having most fun throwing too.
The only thing I would add would be jigs. like football jigs whenever it's colder, and then, you know, like whenever it's colder, I like to throw a little bit lighter jig, usually like a 3/8 channel swing banks, but a football jig out deep, you know, I love jigs though. So I think earlier in the year, I'm thinking jigs a lot with some orange in it.
Your Alabama is showing, Dan.
Yeah. I'll tell you, like in Southwest Ohio, we're a little limited on the type of lures we
can. Sure.
You mentioned like the Alabama rig, right? Well, not that you can't catch them on an Alabama rig here, but the water tends to be a lot muddier. So the Alabama rig just doesn't play as well in that dirtier water, right? Yep. You know, for me, it's a lot of bladed jigs when it's really cold, super cold. And then as soon as it warms up, like into the mid 40s, man, I'm like you, man, put a trap on. I put like a red eye shad on and I'll cruise yep. the flats and hit that transition zone right where it drops off. And you hit it in the right day, they'll be loaded up on it, you know, and they'll be hitting moving baits. But I also employ a lot of the smaller soft plastics, you know, because I feel like if you're talking about a rough day during the colder times when they're not as active and they're not moving as much, like a really small swim bait that you're just like either dragging it on the bottom or you're just barely ticking stuff on the bottom, super slow, super low. Or like some type of Ned rig, whatever it's like, whether it's a creature, a little bait, or whether it's the actual little Ned rig itself, you know, something small for those temperatures. But, you know, I really wanted to get on something that you talked about, Adam, when you were talking about the different waves of fish coming in. You know, I find that fascinating because, you know, for years I've been saying this, is that I feel like when the waves happen, there's a moon wave. Then there's a temperature wave, mm-hmm. and then there's a wave where they're relating to this how much sunlight there is, not necessarily even temperature, but just how much sun there is.
Agreed.
You know, I feel like those people say, "Oh, these different waves are coming in." I feel like people are missing that. Like one is actually a moon phase wave. Those fish are all because of the moon, you know. And then there's one wave that's all because of the temperature's just right for them, whether it's 52 degrees or 58 degrees. You know, and I just found that really interesting how you brought that up, because, you know, when I talk to a lot of people, they kind of look at me like I have two heads when I say that, or like I'm like telling them a fishing story. And I'm like, no, really? I mean, you know, there's a full moon about to happen. The water temp's not quite right, but I bet you there's a wave moving up. And
you know, nature's going to keep stuff safe by making sure that if there's a big catastrophic event, that not everything that was on the bank spawning, if they get wiped out or the water drops and all those eggs are done, like there are still other fish that are going to have the opportunity to go. So, you know, nature's got its reasoning for doing that, but I've just flat out seen it, you know, like there's even fit. Now I haven't seen much of this, maybe once or twice ever, is like at the end of the year, there's fish that do like the fall spawn thing and will move up just on a moon. And
not a lot.
I've heard more about it up north, actually, where you'll see like a bucks going and making a bed. You won't ever see them paired up. It may have even been you talking to me about it, Bailey. I don't remember. But those fish have their flavors they like. Some like the moon, some like that sun, some like the water temp, and some like a certain cover to be underwater. And you can usually tell on which fishery it is, which one that they're prepared for. But I just get excited about the first, when they all coincide the most, and you get that big rush to the bank when it's a warm full moon and, you know, conditions are stable, like you can get most excited because you're just going to have a big population of bass going where you know they should go.
Uh-huh.
And there's something that you said, Bailey, that really stuck out, is that some fish spawn deep. Mm-hmm. Like really, really deep. And the first time I heard of this was when I was talking to an old guy at Kentucky Lake, like 15 years ago, like the first time I was down there, some old guy. And I was down there that time of year when they were spawning. I was just talking to him and he's like, don't be afraid. I know you're in a kayak, but don't be afraid to go out to those ledges and find beds on your fish finder on the places that there's like current breaks.
And I was like, you know, it took me a couple years, but then I found some, and it wasn't on Kentucky Lake. It was on a totally different lake, but I found exactly what he was talking about. I started finding beds that were like 15 to 30 feet deep, and it was just blowing my mind because you couldn't, you know, you obviously can't visually see them. You know what I mean? And I had to see them on my side scan, and I would be like, well, wow, look at all those dimples, you know, because they're so deep, you know, in your side scan. And it was at a time when I didn't have a good fish finder, but with coming up with LiveScope, you can really visualize the stuff, even if it's 30 feet deep. And I think a lot of people miss that and miss that in fishing, that there is a lot of spawning happening in very deep, deep water.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's just a northern thing. I mean, I can't say I've seen it, you know, below Kentucky Lake, you know, I can't say I have.
Last year it was the Lake Murray event. For the elites, Tyler Rivette was catching them in like 8 to 10 on stumps that were out deeper, largemouth. And I know like Keith Tuma was talking about Toledo Bend when he almost won that open last year. He was in 12 to 13 catching them spawning on stumps. So I think they definitely do. I think the biggest thing it factors in is one, water clarity first and foremost, and then two, sunlight that reaches that depth. If the sun can reach it, I think that they feel comfortable to spawn. But at the end of the coal, if they feel comfortable, not like – I can give you my best theory, but that's up to a fisheries biologist that could give you a legitimate answer on that. Again, this is all just personal experience where it's just been where I thought I'd saw. I figured it out a couple years back, or probably 5 or 6 years back, where I really dialed it in to timing anyway, was I thought I saw it on side imaging, rock piles on a lake that we have here up north. And it just so happened to be pretty clear. It was about 17, 18 foot. I thought I could see what looked like a smallmouth bed. So I took my AquaView out and I was able to confirm it down there. And when I really was surprised was when I saw it was a largemouth that was sitting in it and not a smallmouth. And I was like, oh my God. It's crazy what these fish will do. As long as they have clarity and you know, some sunlight, I mean, they'll go where, as long as they feel ready to go, they'll go.
Last year I was catching spawning bass in the tops of trees, but the trees were 25 foot tall and they were spawning in the tops of them.
Like they were nesting in the tops. Yeah, of
that's trees. What Joyce Fuentes was saying about Seminole, how he was catching those fish.
I wasn't going to say it, but that's where we were doing.
Oh, shoot. Seminole. Come on, man.
Seminole. and the person who won our last big tournament there that's the pattern they were on.
I didn't know they were spawning on the tops of the trees.
Yeah, that's wow. What we found. We found.
Adam's never going to talk to me ever again, though. Hey,
you already know all this stuff. But man, when if I'm showing up for a place for the first time, or just starting to practice off this time of year, one of the first things I'll do: run to the very back of a pocket or a creek, see what those water temps look like, see what that main lake water looks like, and a little bit of in between, and just that right there, just knowing my water temperatures. I don't even have to see signs of life or anything else. Just that right there will give me a really good idea on like my approach and how I need to start. And then, you know, getting the water temp of a clear spring water in the very back of a creek versus like a little bit of the delta part of a creek or the mouth of it. Like the water clarity will, your temperature will change with the water clarity as well. And it can be good and bad. The rule of thumb that I've kind of thrown out the window as far as like clear water heating up or cooling off first, like even though there's some science that I've seen shallow mud flats warm up really quick, but I've also seen like cooler or like completely clear shallower areas warm up really quickly too. But I'm scooting all over the lake or that fishery, especially if I'm just filling it out for the first time in the season for a tournament. I'm getting all the different variations. I want to find the hottest part in the lake. I want to find this coldest part. And that lets me know like what my range is to dive in and figure out whatever I need to figure out.
Yeah. I'll say something, a little tidbit, that not many people have come around to using just yet, 'cause it is relatively new. It still doesn't replace like the work that say, you know, Adam's putting in of going back to that creek and actually looking around himself, but, Omnia Fishing launched, there with their app, that new premium pro layer of water clarity and water
temp. It's amazing.
It'll take, like, if you're a guy that goes down and you're practicing for a couple hours on a Friday, like, this is your saving grace because it saves you so much time being able to stay.
Explain more about it, Bailey, because my shout out to Jordan Westerman. He showed me this like about a month ago, and it kind of blew my mind a little bit, but I don't have the app, and you, it sounds like you do. So please explain more. It's worth explaining. It's super cool.
Yeah. So it's called Omnia Fishing Premium Pro. It's $50 a year to become a premium pro member. There's a lot of perks to it, but and I think the map alone itself is, it, especially this time of year, it is clutch, because there's a few different layers, but this time of year, the two that they have a water clarity layer and they have a water temperature layer. So you can see exactly where the cold water temps are. You can see how different, like I was looking at Lake Murray, I could see where the clear water was and how far that went up the lake. I could see how warm the muddy water was going to be.
And is it updated within like 24 hours or how updated is it?
It's daily. Yeah.
Where are they getting this data from?
That I'm not allowed to tell, but it's legit and they're working on it being actual real time soon. So that will even change things. So you're going to be able to see the hour by hour change and even predictions, which I think if once they can make that, that's going to be unreal. But you also have the water clarity feature too. So like if you have warm rain coming and you want to see that, how that's changing through practice. And you say like, say you have 2 days of practice and you want to go check three areas, but you can't make that third area. But you want to know how muddy it is or clear it is. You can use that to kind of give a good guess of if that's something that might work out for you. And then there's later in the year, you got, one that I told them I'm pissed that they made in our meeting with them. They have a bottom hardness layer and a vegetation layer. So you can see where some of the condensations of grass are going to be on a fishery, and where some hard spots are, because if you look at them, you can see some, or some rock piles might be on some lakes. And I really wish I didn't release that because now guys are going to go look for them.
It's so cool. And where it really blew my mind, so when Jordan was showing it to me, we were down at Harris Chain. And I think we've all been to Harris Chain in this group right here. It's literally a group of lakes. Most of them are kind of bowl shaped or whatever.
Yep.
And that tournament that we had there a few weeks ago was landing right on the full moon. And there was a big wave of fish that went up to spawn. And so when Jordan was like showing me this app, he pulled up the entire Harris Chain where I could see all the lakes. And each one of them had like thermal mapping on the lake. So you could see which lake was warmest, what part of the lake was warmest. And you can eventually do what Bailey was saying. You can go on to see the vegetation growth in the lake. So you could, instead of having to jump around to 6 or 10 different lakes just to get some water temperature readings, pull up the app and we've got some accurate stuff there. That's not just a guessing game, but it's actual data. So really impressive. Big time saver.
You guys are saying it's accurate.
Best I could tell. Yeah. Look at that. That's exactly. So you can tell, like, see those cool pockets. The audio audience isn't going to see Bailey holding up his phone right now, but he's showing an example of the different thermal spots on the lake. So
that's amazing. I'd love to see that in the summer, the reverse, you know?
Where's the cool water? Yep. Or maybe after a big rain, like which Feeder Creek has dumped out a bunch of cool water more so than another one. Like it's going to be one of those things where before long, everyone's going to have that app or at least that technology and that knowledge. Because you know, think about us in kayaks, even with our motors now, we can only cover so much water in a practice session. So little things like this, I mean, you don't even have to launch it at a spot.
You shoot water clarity, you can look at the difference between the lakes on Harris and then Apopka and how much different that is.
Night and day.
Yeah. Pretty impressive.
And that's an example of a tournament where that would be most valuable because you have multiple lakes and you'd like to just hone in on probably one or two at best instead of hopping around to all of them, even though they can all be fun. It's great fishery, but.
The new update.
Large geographical area, though.
I'm glad you mentioned all that, Bailey, because that was one thing that I made a mental note of that I probably would have forgotten and regretted after this was recorded. But I think that Omnia app temperature reading is going to be a big deal.
So I haven't heard of that app. Is that all that app does? Is that the main focus of that app?
So you can do the mapping features, but if you also do I think you can get it with premium, but premium pro is the math. Premium, at least there, you can get 10% back. So like if you order $100, you get $10 rewards to Omnia. So like and if you're like me, you buy a crap ton of tackle, you get a lot of free tackle too. So that's the one nice part.
So this is just like a bonus that you can get.
Yeah, I mean, $50 a year for the what you get out of this thing is
pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Pretty worth it.
Is a quarter is 20% of your entry fee for a Bassmaster event.
And whatever, think about what you don't have to spend in gas just driving from like spot to spot. It's probably you probably save it just with that app alone.
Drew right? Gregory is punching the air right now, seeing if he has his tool. Cool.
Oh, that's so true.
Is this a little Drew hush hush thing that he likes to utilize?
No, it's just because like Drew put, you know, Drew in amongst a bunch of other anglers like Justin Largen and like guys that will drive to ramp to go test sea water clarity temperatures. Kind of takes the legwork. Like I said earlier, though, it doesn't. There's still something to said about putting in the work of going back there and actually seeing for yourself if there's fish or not. But like, again, if you're a guy that only gets to fish on Friday, or if you're a weekend guy where you don't get to practice at all, you're just going in fresh on a Saturday. Like, this is the kind of tool that can give you the kind of the best big guess, you know, of where you're going to go fish.
Wow, that's an amazing tool right there.
That's some advanced angler knowledge right there.
It was one. I mean, we work with Omnia on the podcast, and I was like, guys, I don't know if we can work together because I don't want to tell people about this thing. I don't
know if I can do that. I'd heard y'all talking about, and I'm a premium member, but I haven't done the upgrade to premium plus, I guess, to get the map yet.
$50 a year.
And no one's told me. All you guys knew about this. No one said, "Hey, Kurt, man, check this really cool."
You have to listen. You have to listen to their podcast.
Yeah, geez, Kurt, come on now. Oh, we were friends.
This is why I get my ass kicked right here.
So, all right. So we did like the beginning of the year up to the spawn. Kind of what I guess, you know, we're almost at an hour here. I don't want to hold y'all up too long. But post spawn, what is there anything you're looking for immediate post spawn? Like, bluegill beds, is there a certain temperature for that? But after, like, once a spawn has happened, what are you looking for as far as water temperature after that?
I know, you know, in the whole sequence of things, you got your gills, your bluegills going next, and your shad spawn is usually going off right around the time of your first main bluegill spawn, usually month of May around here. But it's like Bailey said, the beds get deeper, the bass beds get deeper. With each wave of bass largemouth that go up, they get a little bit deeper each bed. And if you think about it, like, it makes sense, because at the end of a warm spring day, that's when that shallowest water is going to be warmest. Well, you get deep enough into spring, that end of a warm day might be a little bit too warm for a completely protected spawning flat. And it's in whatever that preferential range is for that largemouth in that particular body of water, they're going to have to slide off a little bit deeper to where, you know, another foot or two deeper, where it's just a little bit cooler and that solar warmth that's beating down on them ain't heating them up out of their comfort zone. So the further you get into the spawn, the deeper the beds. And to me, that's just purely a water temperature based thing for most of them. So that's why the sight fishing to me tapers off the further you get into the main spawn. And it's why I like getting after all my sight fishing during the first wave, because like I said, tend to be shallower. But yeah, the gill beds and shad spawn start really playing after the bass spawn. It's not so much of, even though it's water temperature dictated, I'm more using my eyeballs and a little bit of side skim. Mm-hmm. You're looking for those big tire beds that the bluegills make. Those are easy enough to find whether with your eyeballs or with your electronics. So even though it's all water temperature based, I'm mostly just getting my clues by looking around. And if you can wear the cozy clothes all day, not just at the end of the day, that's usually about time when the bass spawn's wrapping up and everything else is going into mode and the bass are going post-spawn. And of course, your first wave of post-spawners, you can go out and do the offshore thing and do the deep. So it kind of just all opens up at that point. You can do a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. At the end. It's a fun time. One of the best, arguably the best time of the year to fish is right after that first wave does spawn. You got a little fish in all stages.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else you could say on that, to be honest. I think because I haven't really dialed it down to a temperature thing. I think Adam nailed it. Like, that's a visual thing. When you start seeing mayflies, different things are changing, you know, in nature visually, that's when you're like, okay, you can start doing some different stuff.
Yeah. Once you get to post spawn, I feel like I kind of stop paying so much attention to the temperatures, whether it's cool or warm, you know, because some fish are shallow, some are deep, they're moving all over the place. They start wolf packing in some lakes, right? That's when they start wolf packing in some lakes. But I tell you, when I do start paying the temperature again, is in the middle of the hottest part of summer.
Yes.
Right. I try to find those cold water refuges, whether it's a very shaded creek, a spring influenced creek. Because, I mean, if you can find a spring influenced creek, and not just the creek, but the creek bed that runs down in there, because that cold yes. water will stay low, you know, in a lot of lakes, they're silted out for a way. So you'll have this like cold water channel that runs out through that whole silted out area that can have like whole pockets of fish in key areas that, you know, if you get the right structure, you get the right current, you get some bait fish in there, and it's nice and cool where the water around it's like 100 degrees. That's when I start paying attention to it again, is like in those dog days of summer.
Couldn't agree more. It's like your cool water springs, current, be it current driven current or wind driven current. And then shade. Shade's a huge one for me. Now shade will change throughout the day, you know, that shade line or where that shade will get cast, that'll change. So being able to think about where that shade's going to be in a certain time of day, especially if you're under the time constraints of a tournament, that's a big deal in those hot summertime scenarios. I pay a real close attention to shade. But yeah, springs, I always check a spring during the summertime. Those ones that didn't go offshore tend to sneak back in there. And then current, if it's like hot, just try to find a current break or find something where there's some good oxygenated water. And I'm not a big current guy. I tend to like, I don't gravitate towards it as much as others do, but it's one of the big factors, and it's temperature related, you know?
Yeah. All right. Temperature. We did it. All right. Well, that's enough. If there's anything else we need to talk about, we'll talk about once the, you know, late summer and the fall and things like that come around. But we appreciate y'all being on. I want to give you a chance to shout out anybody who makes fishing easier for you, where people can find you online. Bailey, go ahead, man. Tell everybody about Be the Fish. One of the best YouTube channels on YouTube.
If you want to watch some deranged dude fish a little bit, yeah, I got a YouTube channel. If you want to learn what not to do, it's a great place to go watch what not to do. no, man, just check me out on YouTube, Be the Fish. Check out Serious Angler Podcast. Beyond that, we've got some great supporters on both sides of the front there, but I appreciate the invite and being on the show. Enjoy it as always, and get to see the Wonder Stash as well. It's good to see you, Adam. Always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, and Bailey, congrats, man. I was genuinely excited and stoked to see you get that finish that you just knocked out at Murray in a tournament that was very much dominating that top 10 by Northern guys. I was glad to see you in the mix there. That was one where I definitely had some FOMO, and I wish I could have been in that one, but congrats, bud. I'll definitely give a shout-out, some shout-outs. Dugout Bait and Tackle, they're now a fixture in our kayak and sport, and rigging is the main thing right now. If drop your boat off, get it scheduled, because Jamie Koza down there doing his rigging is a busy man, but he's going to give you the latest, greatest stuff and do it in an innovative way. Dakota Lithium, they got a 12-volt, 23 amp-hour battery. It's got a little USB port on it. I've been using that one a whole lot lately for recharging the phone on the water, just in general. That's that specific little battery has been kind of like my go-to one. Let's see what else. Rogue fishing gear. They got some cool stuff coming up. You know, your tow straps, drag straps, but they also got some new tethers. Just when you think that they can improve on a couple little very specific things, I'll just tease it and say they got some really thoughtful things coming up soon. Yak Attack, man, their new series of black packs. I see more and more people with them, and for a good reason. They absolutely hit a home run. We're overdue to hit that home run on that one. So. That's a no-brainer. And then lastly, Bass Brains Swim Baits. My buddy Mark, He's got a new swim bait that should be dropping pretty soon. Not many people are going to get it because not a lot of them are going to get out there. But when that drop does happen, you're going to want to be first in line for it. I think it's going to be a pretty big deal in the swim bait industry when this new bait comes out. So I'll give a shout to those people. And all, as always, just the other three guys I'm looking at on my screen here, man, I appreciate you guys and always enjoy fishing with you and always enjoy rooting for you guys when I'm not able to fish with you. And it's always fun just to chop it up and talk about my favorite thing, which is bass fishing.
That's right. And shout out Hook One. Dugout kind of filled their void, but you're wearing Hook One hoodie. I'm like, man, Hook One.
I did buy a kayak from Hook One back in the day.
Oh, I had all kinds of history with Hook One, the now defunct Hook One. But if you've been around Middle Tennessee long enough, you know how that was a big player in kicking off a lot of different kayak and stuff just in general that we do. So yeah, shout out to Hook One.
From Alabama. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where it was at, man. All right. We appreciate y'all being on and appreciate everybody listening. Y'all be good. Good luck out on the trails the rest of this year if we don't have you on before then. And see y'all next week. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.